Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. Now up on TSN 2, Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Good little show this afternoon. Everyone's in good spirits. Wow. The Jays are a game over 500. Let's not forget about that.
It's our annual show. You forgot to mention that.
It is the annual show. I keep bringing that up. Yep. It's.
We begged and pleaded on, I think it was Friday, wasn't it? It was like, just let's do something different on Monday.
Yeah.
Yep. This, I was talking about that today, that like I've been in radio, TV, podcast, web, whatever, however you want to define us. This station's been around for 11 years.
Yeah.
I was kicking around the market a little bit before that. I've never come in and reset a new series with the Leafs. Like, I was wondering that yesterday. I'm like, if they won on Saturday, how much of today's show would be, wow, breaking down the Lightning, and how much would be Florida tomorrow night?
Panthers tomorrow
night. You know, here we go.
Full matchup scenario, goaltenders, power plays.
And it's just, nothing. It doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. But they got a lot of respect in the handshake line, so there is something there.
Didn't love that. I think
respect in the handshake line. There's the addition to Legends Row.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's a handshake.
Obviously,
line.
You guys know. I mean, you said it. This is bogey. Like, I think the minute Sheldon said it, he knew. Like, you
not
had to walk
a good
that back.
Quote. Not
everyone gives
a
respect
good quote.
In the.
And it's tough because you're scrambling for answers. You're scrambling for something, and he said,
yeah, "You want to play it? We should probably play it.
Okay,
we
play it,
a
and
few
then
times.
We'll, you know,
we referenced it. This was Sheldon Keefe on Saturday night.
We got a lot of respect. In that line from their team, which is nice to see. It was a much different tone, a much different feeling of respect on the other side from what we've experienced previously. I think we're certainly earning respect in the league. But again, we're not in the respect game, we're in the winning game. So we've got to find a way to do that.
It was like at the end he snapped out of it and realized how ridiculous the comment was and said.
I think he did, because if you look, like he's staring out at when he stops talking.
And
he's like, I can't believe I just said that. Like, it makes me wonder, though, what was happening in the line last year against Montreal?
Yeah. It's like my daughter told me once, is this what happened in years past? My daughter plays hockey in Etobicoke, and she said, Dad, we shook hands, and the other team said, good game, not.
was that what was happening?
Yeah, was that what was happening in years Gallagher's past?
You think Brendan Gallagher's
doing. And my daughter actually kind of thought it was funny and stuff. She's like, Dad, they had kind of a smart remark in the handshake line. They said, good game, not.
That
maybe that's what
line.
They were saying.
Maybe that other team in Etobicoke learned that from the Habs. Or Columbus. Columbus the year before put them all in headlocks and gave them, you know, purple nurples. And like, what was happening in the lines before that was
good game, not.
Good game, not. But now, and I found it somewhat patronizing, the Lightning. Of course, they're going to pump the tires publicly of the team they just beat.
Right.
And like Stamkos in particular was overly complimentary, which I get because he's a class act, but he's also a guy that lives here in the summer.
Right.
So he's not going to say anything about the Leafs. Like, what's he going to say? You know, of course, they're a great team.
Coop tossed out the old, I'd have any one of those guys on my
any one of those guys?
Yeah. Just after you booted them in the pills, you're like, I want any one of them on my squad.
Well, that's the biggest throwaway line.
It is, because
ever. I'd take any of them on my line. Okay.
Being classy. And I don't disagree that Tampa was giving them respect. That part, I actually don't disagree.
The Leafs were a really good team, and they went to seven.
And it went to seven, and it was a 2-1 game.
They respected.
But as Sheldon said, you're not in the respect game, you're in the winning game. So however you arrived, you came up short. That's what
has
to be.
That's the point of the whole combo, Jamie. If you're in the winning game and not the respect game, you don't even make the comment.
Right.
It was a bogey. He screwed up, and it's like he snapped out of it and realized how dumb it was to say.
He was in a trance. Like, if you look at his face at the end, he's staring into the abyss. He's like,
he woke
that
up
one.
And said, did I just say that? We're not in the respect game. We're in the winning game.
He knew it was going to get played, and it was going to last a long, long time.
It is what it is. The unfortunate part is we've got to wait 11 months.
At least I guess if you reset the sched, then maybe they start a little bit earlier in April. So Yeah, because it's May. What is it? May 16th today.
16th. So you say April 10th. 11 months.
11 months. Like, yep. 11 months.
11 months to see if you can change the narrative.
Well, Chris Johnston's around this team and is as connected with the Leafs as anybody, and he's our TSN hockey insider, and he joins us now. CJ, you wrote a piece over the weekend about effectively running it back, and they're a good team that ran into a wall again. Can you take us through your thought process on why running it back with this team makes sense?
Well, I think what I saw in that series, to me, it almost distances them a little bit from what happened the 2 years prior. You know, playing a team like Tampa was different, obviously, than losing to Montreal and Columbus. And I think the way they lost showed something. So I watch that and think this is not in need of some drastic, major, crazy overhaul. But when we say run it back, I mean, obviously, there's still going to be changes. I think probably the most important set of decisions will come with their goaltending. You know, I'm not particularly confident that Jack Campbell will be their guy moving forward. Although it's a little soon to say that with any sort of certainty, but, you know, I could see them being in the market there. And then obviously they have Peter Mrazek's contract where they have to figure out, can he be a player for them, or is that something they're moving off of? And so, you know, that's going to be likely a big change. You know, whatever the goaltending duo looks like, there'll be some stuff up front. But, you know, I don't know that we have to be having a big discussion about changing the core or anything like that. For me, I just don't know that would be all that productive. Those guys were the, you know, scored the most points in the series as they're paid to do. They came very close and just fell short against a team that is trying to create some history.
That's what I don't understand about the comment, Chris. Like, they had three cracks to get it done last year. It was obviously extremely disappointing. Another two cracks this year, and they don't get it done. It's just like, How why would things be different in another two or three cracks? If they were up 3-0 on a team, why would they get it done next year? Because of the learning and all the things we've talked about? That's what I don't understand.
Well, let's reframe it then. Like, what are you talking about? Are you saying that just getting rid of one of the main players is addition by subtraction? I mean, what do you think needs to happen if you're talking about removing one of those guys from the roster?
Well, I didn't say I was going to remove one. But I'm just saying, why would you think that things would be anything different if they all came back?
Because I saw a different team this time. You know, I think that this was, they played well enough to win that series.
They didn't. It's about results. They didn't win.
No, I want to jump in on this, though, because I don't think you need drastic changes. But what if you deem that you are going to shake the core a little bit and move one player out? You're not moving him out for nothing, for cap room. You're moving him out for another really good player that can add to your core that might just look a little different or bring something a little bit different. I think we all agree that the spine of this team is going to be back. But if it has a little different look and maybe a little different feel, that's not, you know, again, we keep coming back to the definition of insanity is you're trying something different. You're trying to get through the door. I love John Cooper's comments saying, why the hell would we not bust down that door? You're trying to get through the door to the second round, and you've been doing it with the same group. You know, it might just look a little different feel to get you through. That's kind of, I think, my point.
Point is, Jamie, they got great players, all the stuff Chris talked about, but why isn't the desperation to finally get out of round one and kind of anything it takes to win, why wasn't that far greater than a team that loses their best player and has just won two championships? You can talk about bounces, Nick Paul, this or that, but I don't know. Hey, start asking
questions. But I think the best game, the biggest statement they made was in game one. They looked like a team that was like,
we're winning.
We've been telling you all year we're different, and we're not accepting losing. And then game two, they're flat. Then game three, they show up. Game four, they put forth one of the most pathetic games they've had in playoff history. So I'm with you, Chris. They're better on paper. They were a better team. They're a good team. But ultimately, it was still the same result. And I don't know. I don't know if it's the coach. I don't know if it's one of the main guys. But we're not talking a small sample size here. Like, they've had these core pieces here for a long time.
Right. And look, I would sign up for what Noodles is saying. Like, by no means am I saying don't explore the market. If there's a trade that can be made that makes sense, you know, if one other team is willing to trade one of their good players because it's not working for a certain reason, and whether you're throwing a Nylander in that deal to make it happen or something like that, I'm not saying rule that out. And certainly if you're in Kyle Dubas' office today and for the next several weeks, I think you do have to consider pretty much everything just because of how important the situation is now. I mean, this isn't years left either. Like, you're saying it's not new, but it's also they only have so many more cracks of this thing anyway.
Right.
That's
You know, so they're going to have to change something at some point. They're not re-signing everybody and just rolling this on for 10 years. So
That's where I was going. I'm not looking for anybody to be traded or run out of town just based
on... individually, that's the issue.
Right.
He's got to go.
I'm not circling and saying that guy's got to go because that's the problem. But I'm saying, like, again, hypothetical. What if St. Louis ends up losing out and Tarasenko is available and, you know, it's just not going to work out and you deem that he might be the fit, might be a missing piece? What is that going to take? What might take player X off your roster? It's going to take, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, other teams are going to go through the same thing that we are going through right now as a fan base and them as an organization. And you have to listen. You have to look and scour the market and see what the future looks like. It just... You know, you're not just hunting.
There is a difference between, wow, that fell into my lap, so clearly I have to do it.
And go and look for it.
And I'm being proactive in doing it.
Right.
Like, because there has been a history of that here with, like, Nazem Kadri had to go because he made mistakes. Had to go.
Right.
Part of that was cap related. But you're telling me it can't get to a point like that with these guys? Like, where it just, it's, we can't do it again. You can't. Because, like, they can't even get out of the first round. You can't be a cup contender if you can't get out of the first round.
Thank you very much.
Like, right. So, I don't know what that answer is, Chris. Like, I concluded that Matthews, Marner, Riley are coming back. I think Matthews and Marner deserve to because of who they are and what they represent. Riley, you just gave the contract to. That leaves, for me, the pillars are it's either Keith, Tavares, Nylander. I don't have anything against any of them individually. But for me, if you want to send a message, one of those three can't be back next year.
Well, it'd be a strong message, wouldn't it?
I mean, sure,
you're
either
you're getting rid of the guy who came home in free agency and was much celebrated. You gave the captaincy to. You're getting rid of the coach who just came off a 115-point season and has won a whole ton of games in the regular season anyway since taking over the job. I mean, look, it would deliver a strong message. And, you know, I think we're all in the same spot here in the sense that there isn't an obvious answer.
Right.
This is the truth. Like, everybody is looking for, okay, if they just fix this one thing, it's gonna change everything. I mean, the problem in the NHL is it's hard to get elite talent. They've got elite talent, and it's still not working. And if you shed any of that elite talent and you don't do it in a smart manner, I mean, then you're gonna take a step back. I mean, we've seen other organizations it's happened. You know, Winnipeg was a team that played in the conference final a few years ago. I think we all thought they were going to be a factor for, you know, for a number of seasons, and it hasn't happened. And they've seen some of their big guys go out the door, and I think more will come. So I think you have to be careful with saying anyone has to leave town. I look back on that Kadri deal, quite honestly, and think that was a big mistake, not just because of the trade they make, but because they decided he had to go. And you know, he was cap friendly, frankly, at 4.25 or 4.5 million. And, you know, his career is certainly continuing in a good direction since he left town. So, This is a crazy, crucial time. You know, I've also pointed out in a column I wrote in the Toronto Star, like, Auston Matthews a year from now is when he can sign his extension. Like, mm-hmm. I think that everything has to be done between now and 13 months from now when he can do that to make sure that there's not even a question about whether he's signing. That you know, he looks around and sees an organization built to have success and put him in a position to win a Stanley Cup. And you know, right now, I don't know if it's there, right? I mean, I think that that's how big the summer is that he's got to, you know, come the fall, feel that that's the direction they're heading in, that the moves were made were smart, that they're built to last, that he wants to stay around. Because to me, if he ever gets to the point where he doesn't want to resign here, I mean, it lights out for the whole thing.
Chris, why wasn't locker cleanout day today?
I have no idea, other than my best guess is that they need a little extra time to digest this. Mm-hmm. But I didn't ask anyone, so I don't have any true sense. But normally, let's face it, sometimes in way back when, it used to be the next day after a playoff loss. But this group, it's typically been, you know, one off day after the loss, and then you do it. But they've got an extra day tomorrow, and I'm not sure that they're going to have any of the answers we're looking for. I mean, that might be the problem with your show tomorrow, is that you're going to listen to all this tape and hear the interviews, and we're probably going to be no further ahead.
Well, yeah, we were, because our spidey sense was going off too. We're like, is that some combination of them preparing the message, which I don't know what kind of message you can come up with, and it's not even about retrospective analysis. It's about the future, like what your plan is for the future that you're going to lay out tomorrow, and that's Dubas and Shanahan. Is it that they might be making some sort of a move, coach, GM, whatever, or could it be ownership, you know, saying you got to come and we need to know what's going on here? Because that, like, the ownership has not been a part of the conversation for years, really, ever since Bell and Rodgers bought in, and it's been very quiet. You know, they brought in Shanahan, they brought in Masai on the other side. When Lewicki left, no one knows who the president and CEO is anymore, and they've been very out of sight, out of mind, Chris. But I'm curious if you think that might be changing.
That, well, I'm old enough to remember when ownership was like half the conversation around the team.
Exactly.
You know, it was always, how's the board going to react to this, or, you know, they're going to spend that. I think it's, you know, certainly there's no way. I mean, look, at ownership are fans, and so they're upset the way fans are, and they also have a financial stake in it. And they probably spend more money than every team in the league when you factor in the money and contract that isn't in the NHL, the huge staff they have in pretty much every department. And, you know, playing extra playoff games would be good things for the bottom line. Obviously, winning a Stanley Cup would change the entire complexion financially of what they're sitting on, and so wouldn't surprise me in the least if ownership is part of that discussion. But I would think that's the case every year, to be fair. It's just that this loss and where they go forward it's more urgent, more important than probably the prior losses, even as tough as those were too.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. So once we get through tomorrow, let's assume everyone, you know, management's back, Keefe is back. What do you expect the first kind of domino to fall? Which domino falls for the Leafs? Where do they start? Is it Campbell and his contract? Is it, you know, dealing with UFAs, RFAs? Like you said, Matthews. Do they get to Matthews and talk to him? Try to get a read on where he is and what he's thinking? What do you think is the first move?
Yeah, I think that they would have to have those kind of discussions. You know, maybe not just with Matthews, maybe with Marner, with Riley, with the guys that there's not really any question about them coming back. You know, I think that they have to sort of diagnose, you know, where they think the problem is or where the shortcomings have been, you know, with the key players on the team that are going to be part of it. And, you know, in terms of if no one's being fired, and I have no reason to believe that's the case, you know, it's still probably going to be, what, 6-7 weeks before any real domino falls. I mean, it's free agencies in mid-July. You know, the draft is the first week of July. You know, that's the time when you look to them to start making moves. But I think everything that happens in the meantime is coming up with a plan and figuring out where their needs are and what this is going to look like, because, you know, they're going to have the same situation as prior off seasons. If they don't trade one of the big contracts, they don't really have a ton of money to do everything they're going to do. They're going to try to find the Michael Buntings and Andre Kashas and make smart moves around the fringe of the roster. But there's really only so much they can do there. And so, you know, I don't think there'll be any fireworks unless they come tomorrow, until July at some point when, you know, the sort of trading season will kick off and then free agency.
Do you get a sense for their appetite to, you know, kind of keep Campbell around Mikheyev? Like, is there, you know, maybe rumblings that, you know, you get to them ASAP to kind of see what they're looking for and term and money and all that, to see if there is some common ground before they get to unrestricted free agency?
For sure, those conversations will be active. You know, I think the interesting thing with Campbell is they had talks with his camp, you know, last summer about extending him, and you know, there's a fairly wide variance between what the two sides thought was fair. You know, I think he's actually, and I know he ends up, what, 897 or something in the playoffs, but, you know, watching how that played out, watching how he returned after that swoon in the middle of the season and the injury he had, you know, I think he's rebuilt some value with how he played. You know, it's two playoff series now against Carey Price and Andrei Vasilevskiy, and I know his team doesn't win, but he wasn't, you know, grossly outshone in either one by you know, guys that have won some major awards around this league. And so, you know, I could see a scenario where he probably walks. And I think the same is true with Mikheyev. I mean, it so much hinges on what they're doing with the core or the bigger salaried players. I just think he's priced himself out of the market if they're not making a more significant change to the roster. If it's not something like Nylander or Tavares' contract coming off the books in another deal, I just don't see how they have room to pay him $4 million or whatever he's hoping to get. And I think it's probably somewhere in that range. And so, you know, much like we saw last year, they let Frederik Andersen and Zach Hyman walk. You know, over the years, it's been JVR, Bozak, you know, other players, Jake Gardner, that have, you know, been allowed to leave as free agents. I think that's probably the way they'll go with some of those guys, unless, again, there's a surprise in store and they're willing to make some big trades and all of a sudden maybe have a bit more money to spend.
Sounds like it could be a pretty wild offseason.
I think it's going to be.
Like,
because the cap's not going up very much either.
Yeah. Like, the already rumors or reports out of Pittsburgh about the Penguins lowballing Geno. And
the kicker is Sidney Crosby not happy about it.
Wasn't too happy about that. Those are his boys. I mean, yeah. Those are his guys. And, yeah, it could be a wild one, Chris.
Yeah, look for Pittsburgh. You know, that Fenway Sports Group that bought them has done this in the past, right? With the Red Sox, there was it Mookie Betts? Mm-hmm. Anyway,
yep.
They're known to buy teams and make unpopular decisions in the market with our legacy players, and so wouldn't be surprising to see that happen again.
Yep, it certainly could. All right, buddy, we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, see you next week.
There's Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider.
That's the fine line. It's like, you guys are legends. You've won 3 cups, but you haven't gotten out of the first round in 4 years, so why do you think that a whack of cash is coming your way?
And also,
that's the pressure points. It's like legends.
It's understandable. But, again, that's happening in Pittsburgh. Imagine up in Toronto thinking,
yeah,
you guys just get chance after chance.
Yeah.
Everyone gets to come back when Malkin and Letang are fighting for their lives to stay in Pitt.
And the thing is, you got to pay for what they are now, not for legacy. That's the scary part. Like, if Geno Malkin, who's going to give him $9 million? Like, he's
You can't do it right
on
now.
You know, knee surgery, 36, would be 37 next year.
You can't,
year.
But I think somebody might. A team desperate to kind of splash.
I don't know who that would be. I mean,
unless you have.
I just think a team might.
Yeah.
It's different. You know, I look at a team like Ottawa going after a guy like Claude Giroux from the market, you know, from that area. You might overspend on that situation because that might be the perfect fit if he wants to be there. You know, say Florida goes on a run or something like that. It's situational. Is there a market out there that Geno Malkin would be a perfect fit for to overspend at his age and with the mileage that he has on? I don't see it right now, but I haven't sat back and looked at every team's pressure point.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, okay, does Anaheim bring him in to help those young kids?
Right, Jersey.
Right, you know, Jersey with Jack Hughes. And, you know, do you bring him in kind of like as a legend mentor who could still play and take some real tough matchups and that. And does he want to go to a situation where they're still a couple years away from...
What if Bergeron retires and Boston comes calling him?
That'd be interesting.
That would be kind of interesting. They'd have some money.
Yeah, but they do, but not the type of... Like, Bergeron's not at $9 million.
No.
Like those contracts in Boston are ridiculous.
I don't think Bergeron's coming back. I think he's going to shut it down.
It looked like that 2 days ago or whatever.
I think he always kind of hugs guys when they leave the ice. I think that's his routine. There was just something where I'm like, that guy might be done.
Or maybe he pulls a Tuca and says, I'll see you in the new year. You know, like, I'm not coming back. I'm not doing training camp.
That's a huge... I don't know if he's out of their lineup. They got enough to just cruise through and say, join us now, like Timu Solani did a bunch of years ago, where he said, guys, I'll be there February 1st. But Justin Williams did the same thing. If you take Bergeron off that perfection line or whatever offensively, he kind of drives the bus offensively, man. He's so important.
Yeah, he is.
And defensively.
Eric Halla ain't cruising with, like, he's not making it work.
Not. Charlie Coyle's not doing what he does.
No, those are good players. They're not. Bergeron's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, all
absolutely.
Day.
Like, he's one of the best players who ever played the game as far as, you know, what he brings. You talk about details, and even the analytics community loves him because, you know, you talk to Mike Kelly. He might have had one of his greatest defensive seasons this year.
Right.
At 37.
One of the great defensive seasons of all time.
Of all time.
Metrically.
So, like, the, you know.
Metrically.
There you go. Metrically.
You ever say metrically on this show, again, I'll punch you in the side of the head.
Metrically.
Metrically's bad. We have never even heard anything like that on this show.
No, metrically speaking.
MJ will say the shot metrics. On the show sometimes.
Maybe that'll be our analytics segment going forward. Metrically speaking?
Metrically speaking, it is PGA Championship week, and we should start looking ahead to that. Gary McCord, for some reason, is talking about Phil.
Dude,
we'll tell you about that. Why is Jerry McCord?
I would like Gary McCord's car on fire if he came out of the woods and started talking smack about
like,
me.
Like, what are you... Yeah. Why are you talking about this?
I would tie a mustache around his head and say, what are you talking about?
Gary McCoy.
Do you have the quotes?
Orville Rudenbacher is out. I will get the quotes and we'll come back. We got Scott Mitchell from the Dome. Jays are a game above 500. We're feeling good about that. Overdrive continues. Jeez. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so it is PGA Championship week, and this golf report is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. So whatever the weather throws your way, you're covered in a new Subaru with uncommon capability and symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Tiger Woods is there, and he's looking good, and he's saying that he's in great shape.
Dude, I get that, and he's Tiger Woods.
Yeah, they'll be following him.
How does he get? How does he go from Augusta National to his couch to a driving range? No events, no reps, and expect anything other than miss the cut at Southern Hills.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because it seems like the only reason he's playing is to try to get majors and break Jack's record. Because he ain't showing up at the John Deere out in Iowa.
He's got to play. Like, I would think he shows up at the Memorial. Like, Nicholas calls him up and says, we'd like you to come out. I would think he shows up.
Nobody calls that guy up and says, we'd like you to come out. They all would do it if they had the opportunity. But I just wonder what he expects and what his game could be like.
I don't know. I don't think Southern Hills, I think they're going to torch this course. Like, they're all saying, like, it's in great shape.
It's 7,500 yards, par 70. Why would they torch it? 7,500 yards? You would shoot 300 out
these
there.
These guys, 7,500 doesn't matter to these guys. Like, yes, they'll be hitting
they
more long
370.
Irons. They'll be hitting more long irons, but these guys can dial in a 6-iron, you know, like, I'm not saying they're going to, the winner's not going to be 24 or 25 under, but it seems like a gettable course. Now, I don't know if that helps him or hurts him. I'm not sure it does. I mean, he has won at this course before, but it's, you know, wide fairways. The rough will be penal in certain areas. But, yeah, these guys all hit the ball 340, 350. Like, 7,500 yards, I don't even think it matters anymore.
No, you're right.
Gary McCord.
Jerry McCord.
Jerry McCord and his mustache, for whatever reason, has come out and decided to tell the world that he used to gamble with Phil Mickelson back in the day. Like, as if anyone doesn't know that Mickelson gambles. Everyone knows he gambles.
I've just heard, like, I was playing out in Arizona, and the caddy said, it's so crazy. It's just like, I bet you miss the green. I bet you miss the putt. I bet you make the putt. I bet you don't get it. Like, it's insane.
It's live
Isn't that the guy from
nonstop.
Tim Cup who did the... Who does the...
Yeah, Gary McCord, I think he is.
He does the narrating in the at the bar.
Yes,
he's
yes,
like...
Yes.
Yeah. Yep, that's Gary McCord.
He's narrating in Tin Cup gambling.
Yeah.
He basically did that with Phil. That's what he's saying.
Essentially, that's what happened.
Gary McCord.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, Mickelson's in such a weird place. I don't know when we're going to see him again.
When is this tell-all, like...
The book comes out the next week, I think. Week and a half.
It's probably going to... Like, I can't wait for it because it'll be explosive. Something's going to come out of it.
But it's almost like the most explosive things have already come out. Like, the gambling. I don't know what the hell else is going on.
You think Gary McCord is going to be upset if he's not in the book? Like, do you think he expects his little story about Phil to be in the book?
I don't know. But he's probably got a text message that says, any more words out of you, I'll strangle you with your own mustache.
Gary McCord. Gary McCord has Phil Mickelson gambling stories.
Wow.
Anyway.
Scotty Mitch, I bet, gambles on the golf course.
He was just down in Vegas. I'll bet you he was. How do you go to Vegas and not gamble? But
hello?
How about,
I can't hear you.
How about this before we bring him in? Kevin Biggio has been reinstated from the COVID-related IL and optioned to AAA.
No way.
Here is Scott Mitchell, our TSN Jays reporter. What do you make of Biggio on his way down through the QEW to Buffalo? What's going on here?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't say that's a huge surprise at this point. You know, the guy needs at-bats. He just hasn't been able to find regular at-bats, and he needs to go down there and perform, essentially, and you know, I think we've talked about this before, and it's been an interesting little bit of a slide for him over the last couple of years. I mean, in 2020, you know, when they were in Buffalo and he had that kind of scorching hot start, man, this guy looked like, you know, had figured things out and really become a key piece alongside, you know, the other guys. And, you know, I always thought he was going to kind of be a role player, but, you know, the injuries over the last couple of years and, you know, just the inability to hit the fastball has really caught up with him. He's really struggled. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, if you can go down there, kind of get things together, regroup, and then, you know, come up at some point and find a role. But, you know, it's interesting for him right now because he's definitely kind of on the list when you look at kind of what he's done and what Santiago Espinal has done over these last two seasons in terms of kind of stealing away his role and kind of proving that, you know, he can play a role. So, you know, Biggio's got some work to do, and it all starts with, you know, his ability to catch up to the high fastball. The book on him, you know, got out pretty quickly, and teams are just beating him upstairs, and, you know, hasn't made an adjustment yet.
Scotty, if the team was rolling right now, would this transaction still have happened, or do they both coincide, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't think they really coincide. I think, you know, Biggio just needs that bat, and he's not going to get them regularly up here because other guys have surpassed him on the depth chart, and he just hasn't performed. So, you know, he needs to go down there, play regularly, and you know, perform down there, and then he'll get another crack because he's that lefty bat. He can definitely play a role up here if he's right. But, you know, we haven't seen Kevin Biggio, you know, at his best for, you know, well over a year now, and it's been a rough go for him.
We haven't talked to you, or I haven't talked to you in a while. The last time I did talk to you, A, you made fun of me, and B, the record was impressive, and people around the league were talking about World Series champions, the best team in the league, favorites, pitching's unreal, Vladdy was dialed in, and it's been quite a turnaround. What the hell's going on here?
I mean, yeah, it's baseball, man. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, one week or month, you can look like world beaters, and, you know, the next month, you can kind of have everything go sideways at the same time, and you know, you look at this team, and it's really the equation is they just haven't been able to hit with runners in scoring position. I mean, 185 last in baseball. You know, you're not going to score enough runs to win games. And, you know, really the fact that they're, you know, one game over 500 at this point after struggling, you know, kind of coming out of New York pretty much for the last month or so now, you know, it's pretty amazing because they've, you know, they just haven't been able to hit. And it's kind of stunning when you look at this roster and you look at all the elite bats in this lineup. And, you know, Teoscar Hernandez's absence was a huge blow. And I think, you know, a lot of people, even around this team, kind of recognized how important he was to the lineup construction. And, you know, Charlie Montoya admitted today this team is feeling the pressure in terms of, you know, walking up to the plate and trying to produce at this point. And it's not just the fact that they're getting unlucky with runners in scoring position. They're pressing. They're chasing bad pitches. You know, they're coming out of their approach, you know, with runners on, trying to make something happen. And we're seeing a young team look like a young team at this point. And, you know, these guys are feeling it. I mean, George Springer called the players-only meeting in New York, and they talked. And, you know, they've talked openly about the fact they need to get this going. And, you know, June 20th of last year was the last time they were 500 at 35-35. And if they lose tonight, they're back in that position. And, you know, I don't think anyone would have envisioned this, you know, at this point, you know, 6 weeks ago. But it's baseball. It's a long season. It's mid-May. So, I mean, looking at the standings and playing that game and, you know, the daily, you know, ALE standings watch probably isn't smart to do right now. You know, this team is really, really talented. And, you know, everyone expects them to get it together, and 185 in scoring position, you know, just isn't sustainable in a good way for the Jays because that's going to come back to earth at some point.
When does it go from the Springer players-only meeting and now Biggio's been sent down? What does it take for things to get a little bit uncomfortable and awkward down there?
You know what? Probably an injury or two. I think you can look at this team as a healthy ball club right now and say, look, they're going to find ways to hit. Bo's going to be better. Vladdy's even going to be better. His numbers look kind of human at this point. But, you know, you get one injury, maybe in the rotation. You know, Tim Mays on the IL tonight isn't something that should go unnoticed because he's been such a key part of that bullpen, especially with Jordan Romano kind of being up and down over the last little bit. His velocity's been down at times, which is obviously concerning for a guy who's 98, 99, 100 last year. And then this year he's more 95, 96. So, you know, I think health is so, so vital over these next few weeks and couple months, because if you have, you know, a couple debilitating injuries, that's when things can start to go sideways, even for the best of teams.
How has Charlie been through this? Are the bongos, like, lit on fire and they don't come out, or is he still kind of happy-go-lucky and understands that when the team's struggling, you just can't go nuts and be a completely different person?
Yeah, I mean, look, Charlie's a little sketchy at the best of times in terms of, you know, how he presents himself and the confidence he portrays. And, you know, I think when you look at some of the pressure on this team right now, I mean, we talked about it for months. I mean, they're high expectations. And, you know, these kids are feeling it. Montoya's feeling it a little bit. And, you know, he finally kind of mixed and matched the lineup a little bit on the weekend, got a little bit of results in Tampa on Saturday. But when you look at this, yeah, I mean, you're going to get into the next couple of weeks, and if they don't start hitting, you're going to have to start getting desperate, moving guys around. And, you know, I think everyone looks at this team and just believes there's too much talent because, like I said, there haven't been those debilitating injuries. It's a healthy team. You know, the bad luck with runners in scoring position kind of has to change at some point. But when you start to talk about a young baseball club feeling the pressure, I mean, you know, that's the variable that you can't really quantify about how this is going to go. And, you know, Charlie's a manager who's been around 4 years now, and, you know, there's pressure on him. And this is the first year he's kind of felt that, because I think the last couple of years have kind of been, you know, house money for him, just kind of, you know, stewarding a young team back into contention. And now things are real. And, you know, if they fall back to 500 tonight, people are going to talk about that. And, you know, it's a big homestand because these are some games you probably should win.
Scotty, our host, Brian Hayes. Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, Jeff. We're Scott Mitchell, our TSN Jays reporter. You mentioned the lineup moving around. Really, that was Bichette that stood out, where Saturday and Sunday he moved into the cleanup spot. The lineup's out today, and he's going back into the two-hole. He was hitless over the weekend. He's got an OPS now down to 619. I mean, ultimately, that's where it starts for me. Like, Bichette, he's getting tons of at-bats, and he's not hitting at all. He's not slugging at all. He's not hitting for power. He's striking out too much. At some point, it's got to give. But what can realistically happen, you know, to trigger that? And once you've moved him back, now you're moving him back into the two-hole. They're not going to embarrass him and hit him seventh or eighth. So what do they do with Bichette?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you look, when they went out on this road trip, it looked like he was really getting it together, starting to find his swing and find his groove. And it's interesting, you mentioned the power, and you know, that's where, you know, this lineup has gone sideways for me, is Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez, who missed a good chunk of time, and Lourdes Gurriel. They've accounted for 7 home runs total. And, you know, we're sitting here in mid-May. That's just not going to cut it from, you know, guys who are supposed to really be producing. And, yeah, Bo, they got to figure out, you know, what to do. And I think when you look at what Charlie said tonight, what, you know, kind of what the party line is, they're just waiting for one guy to get hot, and then it kind of starts to take the pressure off of other guys. And Bo is probably that guy. When Montoya said these guys are feeling the pressure, I think Bo is probably the guy he's pointing to most, because, you know, I've seen him around the clubhouse, and, you know, this is a frustrated guy who hasn't experienced much, you know, lack of success and much failure in his career up to this point. And you can definitely look at this as the toughest time, you know, at any time as a pro, because he raked through the minor leagues. He raked when he came up in 2019, 2020, last year. You know, there really weren't these huge dips in terms of the power. And when you look at how hard he's been hitting the ball, the power should be there. So I think everyone's kind of confident that he's going to turn it around. But, yeah, we're sitting here in mid-May. He's got 3 home runs. And, you know, that's just not the Bichette this club needs, because I was talking about him as a sneaky dark horse MVP candidate 6 weeks ago.
So Seattle's up here, which means Robbie Ray was supposed to be up here, but he's not. And I think we're all connecting the same dots based on vaccination status. If we're connecting those dots correctly, how big of a factor would that play into the lack of re-signing in Toronto, the Jays attacking Kevin Gausman in the offseason? Where does all of this kind of connect for the Blue Jays and Robbie Ray?
Yeah, there's a couple of variables there. I think obviously the notion here is that Ray is unvaccinated, you know, them lining him up to pitch yesterday and then not even bringing him to Toronto. So, you know, that's really no secret. And I think when you look at what the Blue Jays were doing in the offseason, I can tell you with 100% certainty that they preferred Kevin Gausman over Robbie Ray. And I think we're seeing, you know, why, really, because Gausman has been so excellent. But, you know, I think money talks. I think you have to talk to Ray about where that threshold was of him getting vaxxed. And, you know, I think if he had an offer, you know, on the table that was similar to what the Blue Jays were offering, which was, you know, the case from everything that I've heard, because the Blue Jays didn't shy away from trying to re-sign him. They were talking to him pretty much all offseason. And, you know, they got pretty much matching contracts. I think, you know, Ray, if that was his personal preference to not get vaccinated, obviously, you take the team in the States and go that route. But, You know, I think the variable for me that, you know, people need to know is that Gausman over Ray was the Blue Jays front office choice and their first choice. So this wasn't, you know, a case of Ray saying, I won't get back, and the Blue Jays having to pivot.
Scott, thanks for doing this. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, though. Appreciate that, pal.
No problem.
All right, buddy. We'll do it again down the road. I'll jump on top of that.
Wow.
Noodles, do you want to say goodbye?
Jerry King over there.
Yeah, I know, man. I just constantly, that finger was going to break. It was in the air every single question.
I had the Phil Mickelson finger.
You had the Phil Mickelson. I was Gary McCord. I'm sitting here saying, let me get in on this.
You're going to get strangled with that mustache if you don't shut up, Jerry McCord.
Jerry McCord. Right before the PGA. Poor Phil. I can't believe he's not there. He'd be speaking yesterday. You talk about audio. We'd have the Leafs speaking tomorrow and Phil at the PGA.
There's a great piece out there. I actually read a piece. It was like, what a turn of events from 1 year ago.
Yeah.
This guy was walking on the 18th green, winning the PGA championship. And to think of where he is in one calendar year, it's outrageous.
Yeah, it's a huge fall from grace. Massive fall from grace. Phil Mickelson.
A lot of it is self-inflicted.
Yes.
Oh, my God. All of it.
That's the thing. Like, it's not, you know, bad luck. It's, you know, bad decisions. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and there's a lot more behind the curtain, too. A lot more there that the public just isn't aware of. Right. I'm not aware of. It's not like I'm privy to it. I don't know what's up with Phil, but it seems like it's pretty bad.
Well, it seems like now that he's down, there's some people that are distancing themselves from him.
And they love kicking, too.
And going out of their way to kick him in the pills on the way out. Now, that might come where people, when he was on top, he might have treated some people poorly.
That's the way.
You know what?
That's the way it can go. You're right.
You know, I can't wait to kick you in the nuts on the when people find out the real you.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it just seems like there are certain things. If you have a good reputation and people like you, for the most part, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt. It doesn't seem like he's getting anything of the benefit of the doubt around here.
Not right now, he's not. But I think he's lucky that this whole scene coincides with Tiger Woods' arrival, right? Like a return, because everything's about Tiger again.
Right.
Like everything's pictures of Tiger at Southern Hills. What's Tiger going to do? The whole story this week is Tiger again. Like
Scottie
Scheffler.
Have you ever seen so many pics and vids of a guy in a practice round?
He's
arrived.
My God. There he is. Look at the shirt he's wearing. He's wearing the FootJoy shoes again.
Yeah, he's walking up a hill. Looks butter.
Yeah.
But he's got the shoes on.
He's still got the
that
same shoes.
That caused a stir. That does cause a stir.
It did. They
Dude,
still.
How the hell did Nike not come up with a shoe?
I don't know. You've had a month to figure out a new shoe.
Okay, so it's 6:47. We never got to the bet. We will event. Let's deal with that tomorrow.
Iron covers in a new salad. Don't worry about it. We won't forget.
Not the cash. I don't
no,
care.
No, we
about
owe
the
you $100.
Cash is in. Yeah, that.
I don't
that
care
has
about the
happen.
Money.
I'm paying right now.
No.
I'll pay right
I
now.
I don't want the money.
Dude,
no,
I'm not.
I want to deal
want
with
iron
the iron
That's
salad.
The only reason you brought it up is because of the money. I'm not.
No, it's not.
Do you want 100 for him or do you got it?
I have it. Yes.
I don't want the money. I want the iron covers.
The
people
iron
have been tweeting at us saying this guy's got to have an iron cover.
When are we back in here? Monday?
No, we're back in later in the week.
Wednesday.
I'll bring the razor in. You can shave the top part
we're
of my dome.
We're not shaving your head.
Well, maybe we will.
Al's brother will.
Get the iron covers. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right. So we're into the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, into the second round in the NBA. PGA Championship this week. There's a lot of good distractions. A lot of things going on. The Jays are back home. They got a homestand here. Above 500. Don't forget that. They're above 500. So
they'll be going.
We'll see. We'll see what's happening down there at the Dome.
So much time left. They'll get going. Like,
yeah, they'll be fine. They're going to start hitting at some point. It's just a matter of when. It's been a long drought, though. They've lost four series in a row.
Like to see Vladdy.
Vladdy's got to get going again. Like, yeah, like his numbers are still there, but he's got a series in him where he just destroys the opposition. And Bichette's a guy you really – he's got three home runs, man. He's on pace for like 12 home runs.
Yeah.
That's got to change. Yeah. He's a guy that I had penciled in for like 35 home runs.
I agree.
So he's got to get going here. But, yeah, so we got that. And the Leafs will be speaking tomorrow. So
what comes out of that will be fascinating.
I have to believe someone will say something that we were not expecting. The players.
Think so?
I think a number of the players will just come through with the cue cards and say, get me out of here. One guy will say, it's got to be someone that – that has term. It's but like it can't be Spezza or Gio. Like he just got there. I think it's one of the big boys has got to say something of substance, and we'll see what the GM and the president say. I'm assuming Shanahan speaks tomorrow. I would guess he'll be up there with Dubas, but yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Exactly.
Right?
So see how it unfolds.
That's going to happen tomorrow. All right, there it is. The 11th year in a row. The anniversary show.
The annual show.
The annual show. It was fun.
Not the best.
Not the best. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
Rick Moranis, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.